for such a warm introduction. So, am I audible to everyone? Okay. So, I am sure that most of us in this room are well aware about the importance of scholarly communication. But just to begin with and to reiterate on that, it is not only sufficient to do a path breaking research and produce like excellent research output, it is equally important to let the global scientific community to let them know about it, to keep them well informed about our progress. So, why it is so? Because the primary motivation is of course to share the scientific knowledge with the wider community, and secondly, it is also important to tell the world that who did it first, right? Because we need to be informed about which researcher was attempting to solve a problem and has become successful, I mean for the first time to reach at a solution, or which group of researchers have been able to make some observation for the first time, or maybe to develop something totally new which was not existing until now. So, it is scientific communication is also very important for such a purpose, to tell the world that yes, we did it for the first time. And of course, as we all know, it is also considered as a very important benchmark in the academic career and growth of a researcher. So, as we know, there are several channels of such academic communication, and the most important of them being academic journals, conference papers, and maybe subsequently in the shape of a book. Okay, so, now we might be interested to know that how big is this global community that is related to scholarly communication. So, now as per a report published in 2018, the total number of researchers around the world comes to 7 to 8 million. There are more than 33,000 peer reviewed journals, and we should know that this number only is applicable for the journals that are published in English. On top of this, there are close to 10,000 journals that are published in non-English languages. So, altogether these journals publish more than 3 million articles per year, and there are close to 10,000 journal publishers. So, what does the global picture look like in terms of country wise output of publication? So, US occupies the top position and being closely followed by China, and then come US, Germany and Japan. But I should mention here that going by the current trend, it is expected that China is going to overtake US very soon and occupy the top position in terms of the publication output. Okay, so, these numbers basically give us the broad picture of how the global community of global community that is related to scholarly communication, how they look like. Okay, so, now what steps does a researcher go through in the process of a journal publication, right? So, so as soon as he or she is ready with the research output, then that person might be writing down the paper, and that will go through few rounds of iteration before the draft is finalized. Then it will be submitted to a journal, and then it will receive peer review comments, and then probably the researcher is going to revise the manuscript as per the comments, and then will resubmit to the journal. And once it is accepted, the journal will send the manuscript for typesetting and proofreading for publication. And finally, the manuscript is going to see the light of the day as a published journal article, right. So, as we see in this process, the key component in all the steps in the process is the manuscript, right. So, this is very evident. So, today I am going to talk primarily about the aspects of manuscript writing in terms of structure and language, and what are the errors that we commonly observe in academic writing in these terms. Okay, so, first let's discuss what a manuscript should ideally look like. So, obviously, the most important part of a manuscript is the title. That is what catches our attention as soon as we open a manuscript for reading. So, the purpose of the title is to highlight the key aspects of the study, And sometimes the paper can also contain a running head or an abbreviated title, which is basically a shortened version of the title, and it appears in the header or footer of all the pages of the manuscript except the title page. But the purpose is the same, just to highlight the key points about the study. So, next comes the abstract. So, this is a piece of standalone text that presents a very concise information about the background of the study as well as the main features, like what was done in the study, how it was done, what results were obtained, what do they signify, all this information in a very concise fashion. Next comes the introduction. So, the purpose of the introduction is to provide a detailed background of the study, is to clearly highlight where the gap exists in the current field, and then it should mention how that study aims to bridge that gap. Okay. Then next comes the method section, which explains in detail how the study is designed. And then it should talk about what materials were used, what techniques were involved, what equipment were used. And in case of studies, especially those related to life science and medicine, where animal subjects or human participants were involved, this section should also provide information on the subjects. Right? And an important aspect of the method section is that it should contain sufficient information so that another researcher is able to repeat this study so as to verify whether the results can be reproduced. Okay, next comes the results section, and as it is very evident from the name, its purpose is to present the various observations that were made by the researchers in the study. And next one is the discussion section. So, where the significance of the results are interpreted, that what they actually imply, right, in terms of the aim of the study, and how the different observations can be correlated. Do they agree with the results of previous studies, or do they contradict, and if they are contradicting, so what can be the possible reasons? So, all these things should be covered in the discussion section. So, finally, the manuscript ends with the conclusion section. So, where typically provide a concise summary of the study, that is what was done, how it was done, what were the important results, and that is not only sufficient. This section should also mention if the study had any limitations, what were the broad implications of the results of the study, and what scope this study offers for future research. And so the manuscript has also other components, like, as we know, tables and figures. So, the purpose of the table is to systematically represent a large data set, and figures are typically used to graphically illustrate an experimental setup, maybe the flow of an algorithm, and most typically it is used to illustrate what trends the results of the study follow. Okay. So, now here I am showing some typical structures of some sample manuscripts. So, this is an abstract of a study which was carried out to develop a new method for image denoising. So, the abstract starts with a brief background of the study, where it talks about the existing methods for image denoising, their basic features, and what are the limitations of this method. Right? This is how the background of the study is set, where it is mentioned what gap is there currently in the field. And then it talks about the aim of the study, where it is said that how this study is going to bridge this gap. And then it provides few essential details about the methodology employed in the study, what methods were used to develop a new technique so that the limitations of the existing techniques can be overcome, and how they were validated and all. And then some important results of the study are presented, and finally, the abstract ends with a statement highlighting the significance of the results of the study. So, this is the typical structure of an abstract, where all these points should be covered. And as we know, typically journals provide, they mention a word limit for abstracts, which goes like around 200 to 250 words. So, it is important that all these important points are covered within that word limit. Okay, next, we take a look at the structure of an introduction section. So, here this is another paper, where the introduction starts with a description of different types of pressure sensors that are employed in designing flexible and wearable electronic devices. So, at the end of the first paragraph, it says that organic field effect transistors are considered as good candidates for designing such pressure sensors. And then it talks about what all materials are currently used to design such organic field based pressure sensors. And then it mentions what are the limitations of the of such materials that are currently being used. And then it highlights that there is a need to develop a novel material with certain desirable properties that will be able to overcome the limitations of the materials that are currently used. Right? So, then in the final paragraph of the introduction, it is mentioned that what all are being done in this study to achieve this aim of developing a novel material with so and so characteristics. Now, what all methods were used, just a brief mention, and then it covers like what all aspects of this study are going to be presented in this paper. Right? So, till now we have talked about the standard structures of a manuscript. Now, let us take a look at what are the common errors that we observe typically regarding structuring a manuscript. So, let us start with the title. Now, as we know, the purpose of the title is to highlight the important points about the study. But most often the titles can be unnecessarily long, they can contain unnecessary information which overshadows the important points about the study, and sometimes they can also misrepresent a study that is providing some information that is not at all relevant to the study. Okay, next comes the abstract. Now, about the abstract, a very very typical error that is observed is that it lacks sufficient background for the study. Now, it is a very common observation that abstracts start with like in this study so and so was done. Now, just imagine this thing from the reader's point of view, who is reading this manuscript for this paper for the first time and reading through the abstract to understand what is going to be presented in this paper. Now, if the abstract starts with just in this study, he is unable to understand like what was the motivation behind this study, what was the need at all to conduct this study. So, it is very important to start the abstract with a brief background of the study that highlights the currently existing problems in the field and therefore, stresses upon the novelty of the study. Right? Other problems with the abstract can be unnecessary details about the methods and results, and one more very common errors that are found in abstract is that they do not mention at the end what are the broad implications of the study. Now, once again, if we look from the reader's point of view, it is very important to have such a statement, because it gives us a takeaway message that what this study is going to lead to. Right? For example, if an abstract says that like the novel technique developed in this study is going to find several applications in so and so fields, that such a statement is going to create a bigger impact in the reader's mind than just ending the abstract with the results of the study. Okay, now, moving on to the introduction. Now, although the purpose of this section is to provide a detailed background about the study, sometimes this background can be overly long or it can contain some information that is not completely relevant to the study. Next, this section might not highlight completely the existing gap in the field, and therefore, to the reader, the novelty of the study remains unclear. And one more error with the introduction section is that sometimes authors tend to include some details about methods and results which should be ideally avoided. Okay. So, next about the method section. Now, as we mentioned, sometimes typically studies on life science and medicine, they involve animal subjects and human participants. So, in such cases, it is essential to add an ethics statement in the method section, which should mention that this study was approved by an ethics review board, and in case of human participants, it should include an additional statement that they provided informed consent to be part of this study. So, this is an essential statement that should be included in the methods section for such kind of studies. And next, it might miss out information that is necessary for repetition of the study. And also, when it is talking about some published methods or protocols, it is unnecessary to provide a detailed description of it, which can be avoided by just adding some suitable references. Like if the reader is interested to know more about it, they can always look up for those references and read up on them. Okay. Then then this method section might lack a proper chronological order. For example, in a material science study, the section might start with a description of the characterization methods first and then talk about the material synthesis. So, this is not the right approach, and this had to be reversed, right. First, we should talk about the material synthesis, and then comes the characterization techniques. And then other errors can be with regard to when some statistical analysis was performed in the study, that like the method section lacks sufficient detail on it in terms of the tests performed, the samples used, and so on. Sorry. So, next comes the result section. Again, sometimes authors tend to repeat the description of some methods in this section, which is not recommended. The sometimes it might tend to interpret the results more than just presenting the results, which is again not the ideal thing. And sometimes it is typically seen that the text tends to repeat the content that is presented in the figures. For example, we find such sentences like in figure 1, red line denotes, blue line denotes. So, this is unnecessary, because what the different colors denote, that should be presented in the figure and not in the main text. And sometimes we see that the order of presenting the results, it does not correspond with the order of the method section. So, for example, if the method section lists down a set of characterization techniques, now it is recommended that the results, the corresponding results are also presented in that order, so that it is easier for the reader to find a one-to-one correspondence. Now, coming to the discussion section, it might miss out on giving a very detailed interpretation of the results. The results might not be discussed with reference to previous studies, and if at all some contradiction with previous studies was observed, the author might miss out discussing that. Okay, now, finally, coming to the conclusion section. Now, again, it is a very typical error that is observed in manuscripts, is that the conclusion just provides a summary of the study, like what it was done, how it was done, what were the results obtained, that all. But we should understand that this is not the only purpose of conclusion, that it should only summarize the study. It should contain some additional informations in terms of the broad implications of the study, what limitations the study might have, and also what future scope of research the study offers. So, it is always very important to include this additional information in the conclusion section. And lastly, with the figures and tables, sometimes they tend to repeat the information that is already presented in the main text, and sometimes the legends or the figure or table captions might not contain sufficient detail about the content that is presented therein, which might hamper the understanding of the readers. Okay, so that was all about the different kinds of errors that can occur in terms of structuring a manuscript. So, now I will talk about the common grammar errors that we can find in a paper, that is mostly related to the language. Okay. So, now if I am a researcher and I am ready to write down my first draft that is going to be submitted to a journal, it is very natural for me to think that why should I bother so much about language, I am going to present some high end research results here, and even if I leave some few grammar errors here and there, what difference is it going to make, right? Okay, so here is one example of how a grammar error can lead to some undesirable output. Okay, so the thing is, making grammar errors in an academic manuscript might not be as disastrous as this, but definitely they might end up in conveying some different information than what was intended by the author. Now, this is an undesirable outcome, and therefore, we should be careful about adhering to the standard rules and conventions of the language while we are writing a manuscript, right. There are several types of grammar errors that we encounter in academic manuscripts, and I am just going to discuss a few of them with some examples. Okay, so, one common type is with punctuation. when like, and this is called comma splice, when two complete sentences are joined with a comma. Now, we should remember that we can never join two complete sentences with a comma, we can use a period, or if we think that these sentences are very closely linked and they should appear in one single sentence, then we can separate them with a semicolon, but never with a comma. And one more error is a run on, is called a run on sentence when two complete sentences are joined without any punctuation. So, here also ideally a period or a semicolon should have been used. Okay. So, these are some just examples of grammar errors from published papers. So, here again there was a comma splice here where and this should have been ideally replaced by a period or a semicolon, and obviously there is a typo in the section heading. Okay. One more example. So, this is more related to word choice than grammar, like the sentence reads grammatically correct, but it does not read well. So, it talks about like Beck and Rasmussen studied the numerical investigation. Now, studying an investigation does not sound very right, and therefore, probably a better revision of this sentence would be that they conducted a numerical investigation. And here is an example of a grammar error where it says that parametric studies was performed. So, because studies is in plural, the verb also should have been used in plural, that is studies were performed. Okay. So, now there are also some errors related to the sentence structure where the sentence is grammatically perfect, but the way it is structured it can convey an altogether different meaning, right. So, we will just see some examples about it. So, now in this sentence it seems that the dog was thrown in the air and then it caught a stick, right. So, this does not sound very logical to us, and so actually the revision would have been like this, which means that the stick was thrown in the air and then it was caught by the dog. Okay. So, one more example here. So, now let us assume that this information is put up on a conference web page for the participants, and then most of the participants might opt not to go for the conference just by looking at the price for breakfast. They might think that if the breakfast is going to cost so much, how much will it cost for the travel and stay, right. So, probably the conference organizers meant something like this, where the entire package of travel, stay and breakfast is priced this much, right, which sounds logical to the participants. So, the key message is that we should be careful with sentence constructions to ensure that they convey the meaning we want to be conveyed. Okay, so, some more examples of error categories. So, this is again a very commonly occurring error that comes with comparison, right. So, we know that while making comparisons we should always compare between similar items. Now, the same logic applies when we are writing. For example, in this sentence we are drawing a correlation between professions and doctors. Now, this is not the ideal thing to do, because doctor itself is not a profession. So, we could have either revised it like this, that is as doctor to medicine, which is a profession, or call profession as professional, and which then corresponds to doctors. Okay, so, one more example of incorrect comparison. So, here this sentence compares the tensile strength with a sample, now which is not the correct way to write. So, we should either say we should either draw a comparison between the tensile strength of the different samples, or we should compare the samples in terms of the tensile strength, either of these ways, but definitely not the original sentence. Okay. So, sorry, some more examples of errors related to sentence construction. For example, when the tense is not consistent in a sentence, then when the there is some mismatch in the person, in the usage of person in the sentence, and when there is a mismatch between the usage of singular and plural in the sentence. Okay. So, and these are some more categories of language errors that can commonly occur in a manuscript. So, as we know, it is important that in an academic manuscript, we should always use a formal tone and a polite tone. Now, we can have instances where like we are contradicting an already performed study, a previous study, and like in our opinion that study was completely nonsensical, and like we think that it was just it did not make any sense. But the thing is, we can't put that down in writing. Even if we want to convey such a tone about the study, we should do it in a very polite way and in a formal tone, right. Second is that we should aim to construct our sentences so that they are as less wordy as possible while conveying the essential information. For example, in this sentence, it would have been revised to: based on genome information, we discovered a new enzymatic reaction. So, here the revised sentence, it contains all the information that was present in the original sentence, but it is lot more compact. And also we should try to avoid redundancy, that is when we are telling that a list includes so and so terms, we can end it with like and so on and others, which means that like the list is not ending here, right, because including means it is a limited list, whereas and so on indicates the list still continues. And of course, we should be careful of avoiding technical errors, like when we are talking about 44% of voters, we can call them a majority. And we should also ensure that we maintain consistency in terms of style, usage of British American conventions, etcetera. Okay, so once again some more examples from published papers. So, now this is an error with comparison. So, it says that a square pulse needs less current to generate the same response amplitude regarding the other waves. Now, this phrasing regarding the other waves is not very clear to us that what the author intended to convey. So, perhaps a better revision would have been like this, where we are clearly comparing the square pulse stimulation waveform in this study with the other stimulation waveforms and telling that this one needs lesser current. Okay. And one more example here, so where it says that figure 5 shows the temporal profile of plasma temperature for VO at different laser energies, which was found to increase with laser energy. Now, this sentence indicates that the temporal profile was found to increase with laser energy, but that was not probably the case. The temporal profile does not increase, the temperatures increase with the laser energy. So, a better revision of the this sentence would have been like this. So, where we just split up the sentence and make it very clear that the temperature was found to increase with the laser energy. Okay. So, now this is basically to do with consistency. We can follow any of these styles, but the important point is to ensure consistency throughout the manuscript. Okay. So, that was all about the common errors that authors can make while writing a manuscript in terms of the structure and language. Now, I am going to talk about some easily available tools that can be of assistance, that can make our life easier while writing a manuscript. Okay. So, the first one is with referencing, and the tools are as you know, Google Scholar is a very useful search engine for this, and also databases like PubMed, NLM catalog, etcetera. So, now why do we need to reference, or when do we find it useful? So, for example, when we are reading a paper and when we encounter a less familiar or maybe an unfamiliar term, referencing this term online, it helps us to know more about the term and also to find out the related studies that were conducted in the field, right. And also it helps us when for example, in a published paper, we find like two or maybe in different papers, we find different variants of the same term, and we are confused that which one we should use while writing our own paper. Then also referencing helps. We can search for those terms on Google Scholar, and based on the number of hits that each term gets, right, based on that we can decide which one is more widely used by the peers in the field. So, now for example, in this case the reader might wonder whether musculoskeletal is an appropriate term to use. So, just by referencing it on Google Scholar, we see that actually musculoskeletal has only few number of fields, whereas musculoskeletal has a very large number of fields, and therefore this is definitely the correct term to be used. Okay, so now while using such search engines, how we can craft our query better so that we get useful information out of it. For example, when we are searching for a string of words on Google, if we just enter that string right on the search page, Google will return the pages containing all the individual words, but it might not return the pages containing only that string. So, this does not serve our purpose, because we are actually looking for that information, the pages containing that complete string. So, here it helps. So, the way to look for this is to put the entire string within quotes, which now enforces Google to search for only this string and return pages that only contain this string. And there are like more variants of it. We can use the plus operator in terms of a word that we want to tell Google that you have to search for it, you cannot ignore this word, which Google can typically ignore, and thereby we can make Google give us our desired information. And one more is to use the minus sign operator in front of a word that basically tells Google to ignore that word in the search, right. For example, if we search with only Clinton, we will end up learning about Hillary Clinton only, but we might be wanting to learn about other Clintons as well, and therefore if we search with Clinton minus Hillary, then we will get to know about the other Clintons as well. Okay, so one more way to craft queries is to use an asterisk, which is considered as a wildcard by Google, that is as a placeholder for any word. For example, if we search with like Google star my life, it will return pages which contains this string and can contain any word which fits into this sentence. For example, Google save my life, Google ruined my life, Google is my life, whichever is possible. Okay, so one more assistive tool is the spell check tool in Word. Now, we might think that like we are going to anyway proofread the manuscript a few times, you know, once it is finalized and before it is submitted to the journal, then how useful this tool is going to be. The thing is, the spell check tool can help us identify errors that can be easily missed out on a visual check, and it can also help us to apply some styles and conventions uniformly. And it is always recommended to run the spell check like once the manuscript is finalized and it is proofread, so that only the remaining errors that are there that can be caught. So, now what kind of errors this spell check can flag? It can flag errors with hyphenation, punctuation, spelling errors that can be easily missed out on a visual check, then errors in grammar. So, one additional point here that I know most of you would prefer using LaTeX over Word because of the ease of dealing with equations and formula and for referencing and all. So, you might think that this is not going to be of use to you because you can't run a spell check on a LaTeX file. But the thing is, there is a workaround for it where you can use the spell check feature of Word for LaTeX files. So, if you are interested, you can let me know, I can share that tip with you. Okay, so, but one word of caution here, that spell check is not foolproof, because it will not identify words that are already in the dictionary, but might have been used in the file out of context. For example, here it says that which is partly soluble in methanol. Now, this is definitely the wrong word here, this is like results from a typo and it should have been partly soluble, but spell check will not be able to identify it because party is already a word in the dictionary. Okay, so that was all about the different features of manuscript writing and like how we can use some available tools to get some help with that. Now, I will briefly discuss some common mistakes that authors do with regard to ethics in publishing. So, the one of the very important mistakes is while figuring out the author list, that is to determine who an author is. Now, there are two categories of this error. One is called a guest author, so where the person might not have made a substantial contribution to the research to be called as an author, but it is like authorship, he is being gifted the authorship. And the second category is called ghost author, where a person has made significant contribution to the study to be featured in the author list, but he is not included therein. And both these categories are considered as ethical mistakes. So, next comes with regard to conflicts of interest. Now, when do such cases occur? For example, say a medical researcher is writing a paper recommending usage of a certain drug for treating a disease, and he also receives some support from the pharmaceutical company that manufactures this drug. Now, this is a case of conflict of interest, and in such cases it should be disclosed in the manuscript. And next comes with regard to citing sources. So, in some cases we adopt some piece of text, figures or tables from other sources, and it is also important that we cite the sources in our manuscript, and in some cases we need to obtain permission from the source before we can actually include those information in our manuscript. And in such cases we should we typically need to add a statement that obtained with permission from, or like reproduced with permission from so and so sources. Okay, next comes with regard to compliance with reporting guidelines. Now, reporting guidelines are more applicable for studies in life sciences and medicines, where like a checklist is provided to the authors for a particular type of manuscript, and the person needs to ensure that the manuscript contains all the required information that is mentioned in the checklist before it can be submitted to a journal. And lastly, there can be ethical mistakes with regard to submission, that is, as we know, two papers can't share the same data set and the same results. An article that is published once can be submitted again. An article can be published can be submitted to more than one journal at the same time, and data from a study it's not recommended that data from a study can be broken down just to increase the number of publications. Okay, so moving on from here, I will just conclude my talk by discussing some channels of popular science communication. So, I am sure most of us, especially while doing our PhDs, have encountered this question from some relative or friend who is not at all related to the field, that what do you do, what are you doing, right? That is a very typical question, and the researcher might think that, okay, I work on some quantum entanglement, but how am I going to explain this to this person, right? That is a very, very, very common scenario. I am sure all of us must have experienced this, and this forms the motivation of popular science communication. So, here the aim is to present information about complex science concepts and research output in lay terms, and using some engaging contents so that it can reach a broad audience and thereby create a public awareness and make a bigger impact. So, now this type of contents can be of various categories, and as we can clearly understand that while a traditional technical abstract is only limited to the scientific community, a lay abstract which is drafted in terms which the common people find very, very much relatable, that can have a much wider acceptance among the general public and can reach important people like decision makers or leaders that can create a much bigger impact. Now, as I mentioned, such engaging formats can be of different types, and they are broadly divided into two categories. One is called textual format, and in this typically we prepare lay summaries, tweetable abstracts, press releases, blog posts, etc. And another category is multimedia format, And this was actually a study that was carried out to determine the impact of visual abstracts on the sharing of scientific knowledge. And the results clearly indicate that just by including a visual abstract created a very significant positive impact on the reach of this article among the general public. So, these are some other formats of engaging content, like posters, video abstracts, podcasts, etcetera. And generally, usually now most of the research institutes or journal publishers are stressing on creating such contents, so that it finds a wider reach, a wider audience. Okay. So, lastly, before I conclude my talk, a few words about Cactus Communications, where I work. So we are a company who provides language services to researchers across the world. We provide a range of services in terms of English editing and different levels of it, translation services and publication support, that is different types of services throughout the journal of publication. And we are the single largest company that provides language polishing services across the world. And the services are typically divided into two categories. One is academia, that serves research professionals, institutes, journals, publishers, etcetera. And another segment is medical communication, which typically caters to pharmaceutical companies and maybe medical device companies. And we also have this author education platform called Editage Insights, which basically coalesces all the information that can be of use to a researcher during the journey of publication. Okay, and as we talked about popular science communication, we have a separate department in our company, which works on creating such formats for published articles, like video summaries, infographics, research news stories, plain language summaries, and even very customized projects like creating microsites, newsletters, etcetera. Okay, so that was all about academic editing from my side. Thank you for your attention. This one? Oh, okay, sorry.
I thought you want to ask where India
is. India is actually just on the 6th position, I think.
Oh, hey, you could have shown us.
So,
I'm also asking about this.
Yes.
Citation index, so I think you the order is the same or the order is
same?
Total citation.
Total citation index, yeah, because there is always a very stiff competition between US and China. So, and I think China is going to overtake US very soon in terms of like research output and even in terms of citations also. Yes, so
how does this happen? What is the level of so called similarity index which is acceptable?
So basically we might find a trend in like we usually find a trend that some like a piece of text, maybe it can be a general information about something, but that is just adopted from another paper and reproduced in the text. So, this is called plagiarism, which we should avoid. And there is also something called self plagiarism, where we like replicate a piece of text or information from our own like previously published articles. So, both are considered as ethically wrong. And therefore, there are tools like for plagiarism check, for example, plaque check or authenticate. These are like well established tools that can check the paper for you and tell to what extent, what is the percentage of matching it finds with like already published papers. And typically, journals also run such checks before like when a manuscript is submitted, so as to ensure that at least criteria is fulfilled before it goes through the usual submission process. Yes, so we provide different sorts of English editing services where the authors send us manuscripts in English, but they might not be in the level at which the journal will accept. So sometimes they will receive comments from the journal editor or even from the reviewer that like the English language has to be improved, and sometimes the authors themselves might not be confident about their own English quality, and therefore they send these manuscripts to us so as to polish the English. Now there are different levels of this editing service. So in one we will all only look for in terms of errors with sentence construction and grammar. In another level, we'll look for the on top of checking the language, we'll look for the overall structure of the manuscript, like whether it follows the recommended structure as I showed here. And in another level, we try to replicate the peer review process that some person who is expert in the field who will actually go through the manuscript and try to tell the author that whether some information was missing here, whether everything what is written is technically correct or not, so as to avoid receiving some similar comments from the journal and making those corrections beforehand and then going for submission. Right. And then we have translation services where authors submit manuscripts in Chinese, Korean, Russian, and first those files get translated by a group of experts and then it comes to people who actually work on the language to polish it. Biology journals. So it is it's based on the number of times the paper that is published in the journal, number of times it is cited by other researchers.
So it goes by just
the
total sum of articles published there and
the number of times citations, number of citations they have received. Yeah, I think it's here.
For anybody who has practically gone through this, I think there is a very important step which is missing. Which is you send it to journal A, it comes back without going for review, and then you send it to journal B and it comes back without going for review.
Yes.
You go through this, you play ping pong between various journals and eventually land up at something. In the midst of this, every journal tries its best to force you to send it to a paid journal. they try their best to say, oh, it's not for our journal.
Yes, and even in the review stage, it can be a back and forth between the author and the journal, whether the reviewer comments are acceptable, whether the authors are agreeing on it or they are differing from it, and all these things are happen as we know. But yeah, it's difficult to cover everything here. Yes, so we hire them as freelancers. So they are not in-house people, they are on contractual basis. So we have freelancers for different sort of services, for editing, translation, like for this peer review service, for everything, like we have a very big community of freelancers who are like spread worldwide, so as to ensure that we have, you know, as much subject experts as possible for all the fields, right? And so it's basically goes through a chain of steps. So first it like goes to the freelancer, so once that person works on it, it is checked by an in-house person, and then probably if necessary by one more person, and then it is finally sent to the author.
And you pay them?
Yes, of course.
No, I mean freelancers, so not part of degree, part of practice, but
yes, it's like a remote contract, remote con, yeah.
I thought Anna got something about the last part of your thing where you said about the popular science communication popular side.
Yes.
So you said that you can help people to kind of bring out the forms which are more popular, the content that somebody.
Yes.
So can you use some of your clients, or what kind of work, for example, you have done? So suppose somebody sends you a very poorly written or represented material,
just a second.
We expect that you actually prepare in a form that is more reachable to.
Are you talking about this one?
Yeah,
So for such services, we typically worked on published articles. So
awesome.
Published articles.
Oh.
So here the aim of the author is to create some engaging content out of the article which has already been published in a journal. So they are already at a certain level where the, you know, language is passable, we understand what is the content and all. Just we have to present them in a very attractive format and using terms which are understandable by the general public.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Left on purpose. Reuse, recycle.